Studio 360.
When you think of drag performers, you probably think big wigs, high heels, fake Lizas and Judys, and a kind of one-note over-the-top campiness. But that's very 20th century. A whole bunch of performers are out there showing that drag can do lots more, such as Taylor Mack, who transcends the form and is one of today's most magnificent theatrical artists, period. Mack's probably best known for a crazily ambitious project called A 24-Decade History of Popular Music. It's a theater show that takes on American music decade by decade, starting with the 1770s. A year ago, all 246 songs were performed for the first time in a single 24-hour-long concert. A reviewer for the New York Times described that show as one of the great experiences of my life. When Taylor Mack and I spoke back in 2014, A 24-Decade History of Popular Music was still a work in progress. Taylor started by introducing the song, If Your Kisses Can't Hold the Man You Love, Then Your Tears Won't Bring Him Back.
And we do this in the 1920s show. What we do, I tell the story of these two gay men, Larry and Barry. And Larry, they were both in the war, and Larry's, the way he deals with the trauma of having been through the war is to squash the feelings down and not deal with them. And the way Barry deals with them is just to feel depressed. And so they're kind of fighting throughout the concert, Larry and Barry. And at a certain point, they decide to break up, and Larry is very sad about it, and Larry's fairy godmother comes and sings a song to him, and this is it.
Every time that I hear a woman cry that a man has left her flat, I just feel like saying, don't be such a fool, you fool. Come and dry your eyes. Can't you realize that you gain nothing by that? That's no way to keep his heart warm when his love grows cool. What's the use of crying? What's the use of sighing when he's wandered off the track? If your kisses can't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. No use being tearful, you might as well be cheerful when he's given you the sack. 'Cause if your kisses can't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. If sweet sugar kissing will not bring him home, how do you plan to keep him to you with tears and moans? So go be a regular fella, just say what the hella, grab his clothes and you help him pack. 'Cause if your kisses can't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. Home cooking is good and wholesome, but everybody needs a little mutton on the side every now and then. If you find your man is cheating on you, you just go out and you do the same. He's only given you the chance you've been waiting for all these years. You don't have to live a heteronormative narrative any longer. It's called liberation. Men, get them by the score. Neglected women shouldn't worry. That's what God made sailors for. So don't cry for him or chase him. Just go out and replace him with some good-looking Tom, Dick, or Jack. Kisses can't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back. If your kisses can't hold the man you love, then your tears won't bring him back.
That was Taylor Mack, accompanied on piano by Matt Ray, performing If Your Kisses Won't Hold the Man You Love from the 1920s. That was fantastic. There was clearly some modern adaptation there in the talked parts.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And how historically accurate are you endeavoring to be, or will you take lots of liberties?
Oh, there's liberties.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I say it's my subjective history. I'm not a historian, and I don't have an interest in being a historian. I have an interest in history. And so I do a lot of research, and I like to reframe everything. So, for example, music from the 1770s, the whole decade has its own individual theme. Each one has their own theme. And the 1770s decade is about how America was founded on booze, man-boy love, and dandy revenge. And we basically go through the songs and we appropriate them.
You recontextualize
them.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways we don't. For example, Yankee Doodle Dandy was originally sung by the British to make fun of Americans, saying that they were dandies, and they were false dandies. They were tacky dandies, you know. The British lost a particular battle, and so the Americans forced them to dance to Yankee Doodle Dandy while they sang it over and over and over again, and that's how it became an American song that we sing. So that there's a little bit of truth to my appropriation,
right.
You know, which is that our country was founded on dandy revenge.
Yes. Now, will it get tricky a little later in the 1840s and 50s when minstrelsy becomes the big thing?
Well, we've been doing them out of order.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't quite done the 40s, but I found this family of abolitionists. I think they're called the Hutchinson family.
Yes, they were huge stars
in
America.
Huge stars.
Yeah.
And my idea is that we do the 1840s will be just their music.
Uh-huh.
But then that always comes up is there's so many minstrel songs, and it's always a balance of, you know, not ignoring it,
yes.
But also not allowing that particular story to become the story of
right.
of what I'm doing.
But it seems like you can't ignore it. I mean, Stephen Foster, after all.
Oh, well, and so the 1850s we did a Walt Whitman, Stephen Foster mashup. So everyone says that Stephen Foster is the father of American song. But I think Walt Whitman is. So what we did was we basically pitted them against each other. Walt Whitman is the self-declared no sentimentalist, and Stephen Foster is a sentimentalist. And so we kind of use that as a way to kind of attack this minstreling of...
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Gender identity and sexual identity obviously runs through most, if not all, of your work. Does that figure in every decade of this project or not?
Well, it's a queering of history. I really do think that that's a lot of what I'm doing is
uh-huh.
finding where are my people in history,
yeah.
you know, even if I have to make them my people.
Yes.
I don't always focus on it for every decade.
You
but
dial it back sometimes?
Yeah, but sometimes, but it's always present,
yeah.
you know, because it's just who I am and
right.
what I do.
Of course.
So I don't have to hammer people over the head with it because,
yeah.
I mean, they're looking at it, so...
As I've read things you've said and written, it strikes me that surprisingly, given who you are otherwise and the characters you play, that you're kind of a theatrical conservative. You believe in story and craft and giving the audience what they want, right?
Oh, I wouldn't say giving them what they want.
Or at least satisfying them.
I try to give the audience what they need. And what I mean by that is I'm trying to be a student of humanity. And so I try to figure out what do people need at this time in their lives, kind of collectively. Oftentimes, it's just about figuring out what you need because you're a person and people will relate to you. You know, so
yeah.
so that doesn't necessarily mean that the shows are always entertaining or fun or satisfying.
Right.
Sometimes they're really disturbing.
Right. But you are a show person, clearly. You like entertaining.
Yeah, I do. I do like to entertain people. That's true.
You were trained classically as an actor.
Yeah.
How and why and when did drag become the core of your performance?
The whole reason I do it is because I'm interested in homogeneity and heterogeneity. I grew up in a suburban town where everyone was supposed to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I've become very fascinated with that as a result. So my drag was about trying to take a topic and tear that topic apart and say in a kind of postmodern way, you
mm-hmm.
know, and then look at all the pieces and then put them all back together again somehow and say, what's the full range of what the topic looks like and feels like? And it's also about exposing what I look like on the inside. So people will often say, do you feel like you're hiding when you put on those costumes? And I say, no, what I'm doing is I'm exposing what I look like on the inside. So when I'm wearing my jeans and a t-shirt, that's when I'm hiding, because I'm trying to blend in with everybody else.
And you don't, as far as I know, have never had a drag name.
I really did not want to have a drag name.
Because?
Because then you become, you know, Miss Alliance for the rest of your life, yeah, or whatever, you know. And I think that's fun, you know.
But it when sort of trivializes it?
For me, it was about not hiding. So I just kind of wanted to expose who I was.
You performed and wrote this great thing called a theatrical manifesto, I believe, mm-hmm, in which much of it struck me. One of the tenets that really struck me was, quote, if we stop telling a majority of the people they won't like what we do, they would actually like what we do.
Yeah. But I'm really interested in recognizing that people actually, that avant-garde is commercial.
Especially if you don't call it avant-garde.
Right. And I see people enjoy avant-garde fashion all the time. Maybe they make fun of it a little bit, or, you know, but they line up to see it. You know, it's the biggest selling show at the Met. You know,
Alexander McQueen,
Met, you know, is at the Met. And that's the biggest selling show in the history of the Met. And it's avant-garde fashion.
Yeah.
So what did the fashion industry do to encourage their audience to want to see avant-garde fashion and accept that performing artists and
they
theater
just
artists
called
have
it
not
fashion.
Done. Right.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Will you do another song?
Sure.
And this one is?
Oh, we're going to do a Ted Nugent song.
What?
It's called Snakeskin Cowboy.
And this is from the 240-year thing?
Yeah, it's from the 1980s, or it might be 70s. I can't remember. Yeah. But
the Ted Nugent heyday, in any case.
Yeah, exactly. And what we did with it is we didn't want to actually have to listen to the song, because we just read the lyrics. I felt like we needed to do something by somebody who was a conservative, but I didn't want to listen to the song, so we just made up our own melody for it, and we're just singing his lyrics. And so we'll do that for you now.
Excellent.
I think it's fair to assume that this song, you can interpret it this way, that Ted Nugent was writing it to mean that he wanted to bash anyone who was dressed in fancy clothes and performing on a stage. So when I read the lyric, I thought, ooh, that song needs to be appropriated. So we've turned it into a junior high prom dance. And what we'd like the listening audience to do is to find someone next to you, and please just hold them and sway and just dance like you're at the junior prom. It doesn't matter what gender they are. If you're alone in your car or just listening to this by yourself, just hold yourself, because that's subversive. Because if you hold yourself, it means you're a little gay. And our point here is that we want to turn Ted Nugent into a gay. So that's what we're doing. We're gayifying his song. We're emasculating Ted Nugent. So just find your partner, hold them, If you don't do this, we really have to really do it. You have to do it. Because if you don't do it, Ted Nugent will win, and it'll be your fault. Here we go.
That was Taylor Mack, accompanied again, this time on vocal as well as piano by Matt Ray, performing Snakeskin Cowboy.
Wonderful Matt Ray.
That was brilliant. And before I let you go, I'm going to give you a prediction about yourself.
Yeah.
You are, in a very few years, five max, going to be a MacArthur genius.
Oh.
Now, when it happens, you got it.
You're telling people that.
You have to thank me.
I'd
you
like
to,
the money.
You heard it here first.
Sure. Absolutely.
I have never had this thought spontaneously about one of my guests before, but I did now.
Oh, you're very sweet.
I hope it comes true. Taylor Mack, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And it did come true. So I had to call Taylor and check back in.
Hello.
Hi. Is that Taylor?
It is.
Hello, it's Kurt Anderson calling.
Hi, Kurt.
How are you?
I'm really good.
I'll bet you are.
You predicted it.
Well, there you go. And as I said at the time, I had never made such a prediction before. I don't know why I suddenly did at the end of our conversation.
Well, you manifested it for me.
I guess that's it. But is that something you thought like, yeah, maybe so?
Well, it's the Holy Grail. It's the gold rush of the non-commercial artists,
Yeah.
So, of course, you think about it. People say that they just call you and they give you the money. It doesn't really work that way. It's you have to work the system for years and years. And then if you work the system, then maybe they will call you.
And I guess actually, though, more practically, not looking rich is probably helpful.
Well, I don't know. They gave it to David Simon,
That's true. That's true. Do you have any plans or ideas of what you're going to do with the $125,000 a year?
It's this kind of wonderful thing where if I play it right, I could have seed money for every production that I want to do for the rest of my life. It's not like it's enough to stop having to fundraise,
right.
But it is enough that I have something to kickstart everything. And it's enough that I can give back. So I want to do a little combination of the two.
Yes. When we spoke last, you hadn't yet finished 24-decade history of popular music. You have.
Yeah.
It was gloriously realized. Are there going to be more performances coming up that people can see?
Yeah, we just did one in San Francisco at the Curran Theater, and then we went to Melbourne and did the Melbourne Festival, the entire show, 4 6-hour shows. And now we're going to do it in L.A. in March, and then Philly, 2 12-hour shows. And then we're going to retire it. We've been working on it for 7 years now, and I have lots of other projects
Good.
That I want to put out into the world. So
Good. Yeah. Well, it always pleases me when the most talented and the nicest people, it works out for them. So congratulations. And it made me feel good, not just because I predicted it, but because you deserved it.
Well, thank you so much. It's so wonderful. And thank you for your book. I know you're probably not supposed to promote your own stuff on your show, but I'm reading your book, Fantasyland, right now. And it's so exciting.
Well, thank you.
I was raised Christian Scientist, so, my whole life has been Fantasyland.
There you go. There you go.
So I'm really I'm digging it.
Oh, I'm really pleased. I can't wait to see you next in some other performance. Will you take gigs like the Brecht or something else like that in the meantime?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm a gigger. That's my life.
Good, good. Well, you're on the little alert app I have to let me know when you're performing. So I'll appear whenever that next one is.
Our next show is I should have said this, Town Hall, December 12th. We're doing a 24 decade holiday show.
Well, yeah. I'm going to make my tickets for the Taylor Mac Christmas show right now. Taylor, it is always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you.